according to Johns Hopkins University, there have been more than 70,000 confirmed COVID-19 deaths in the United States since they started tracking the illness. And according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there were an estimated 24,000 to 62,000 flu-related deaths in the U.S. during the 2019 to 2020 season. That ran from October of last year to early April. While the number of deaths attributed to the flu is significant, it doesn't tell the full story. And when we try to compare that number to the number of COVID-19 deaths, that story gets even more confusing. At issue is how these deaths are recorded and how they're reported publicly. Our next guest joins us to help clarify these numbers and tell us what, if anything, we can learn from them. Dr. Jonathan Tempty is the Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also chair of the Wisconsin Council on Immunization Practices. Dr. Tempty, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thank you very much, Rob. It's great to be with you again.
Well, a lot of people in the public eye have made comparisons about the death toll of COVID-19 versus annual flu deaths. And I know in my own head and probably a lot of other people, to try to get a sense of the scope of COVID-19, I'm comparing those two numbers. But the more I look at it, the more it isn't really an apples to apples comparison. Can you talk about how we record deaths from both causes and why they might be a little different?
Absolutely. This is an area of a lot of confusion because it is very nebulous. For the COVID-19, this is something we're doing a great deal of testing for right now. When somebody is hospitalized, we're doing testing. And when they die, we know that there is laboratory confirmation. And as we heard on the news break, we have now recorded 353 deaths in Wisconsin, and actually 13 of those reported just today. That compares to laboratory-confirmed influenza deaths in Wisconsin for the entirety of this past year, basically from October through April, of 167. But the challenge comes in, who do you test and who do you have that confirmation on? And that's where we end up entirely relying on projections and estimations for influenza, not only here in Wisconsin, but across the country.
So we know that with influenza here, we know that we have a certain number of people who were tested and died from it, but public health experts are pretty sure that a lot more people may have died as a result of flu or related complications who didn't get tested, who didn't get confirmed. So we have to do some statistical work to get a ballpark of how many that is. Is that right, about right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. In the United States, the only reportable death from influenza are for pediatric cases, so for children age 18 and or age 17 and under. There's a requirement by law for states to report those cases onto the CDC and also for physicians to report those cases to the state. But otherwise, everything is largely the realm of guesswork.
And then with COVID-19, as you're saying, this is when we hear these numbers, they are test-confirmed deaths or, I understand, sometimes clinical evaluations of deaths that match up really well with COVID-19. So these are more precise counts? Is that a fair way to say that?
I think that's fair. Precise in that there is a standard methodology. We still think we're probably missing a number of COVID-19 deaths because there are people who are still dying of things that look like pneumonia or neurological things or heart attacks and so on. And many of these deaths may be attributable to COVID-19, but we just don't have that hard data. So what we're seeing right now, for example, in the 353 deaths, those are all either confirmed by laboratory or having a very, very good case description so we can attribute it in that way. On the flip side, with influenza, during the cold and flu season, we see a lot of people, particularly elders, being admitted to the hospital with congestive heart failure, with respiratory problems, with pneumonias. And unfortunately, the standard is that many of those patients are never tested for any specific virus, including influenza. And so they can go on possibly recover, or they may go on and die, and we don't really know what caused that death.
Talking to Dr. Jonathan Temte from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at how we evaluate the impact, especially in this case, the impact on the death rate here in the United States of influenza versus COVID-19. It's harder to compare and contrast the numbers that we might think, that I might have thought. Dr. Temte, there are arguments out there that say, hey, these CDC numbers or the Johns Hopkins numbers or state-by-state numbers are overstating COVID-19, people saying things that are an unrelated, say, pneumonia case are now being clocked as COVID-19 fatalities. What do you make of that argument?
Well, basically, I just don't buy that. I have to admit, one of the most frightening graphics I've seen in the last couple of weeks comes from CDC. And every week, they report the percent of deaths in the United States that are due to pneumonia or influenza. And over the last 2 months, they've also added in COVID-19. And so if you can think of a period over a long time, when you look at each week and ask the question, how many people this week died of influenza or pneumonia? If you plot that out over time, it goes up and down, more deaths in the wintertime, less deaths in the summertime. And we can use kind of the undulating percentage as an indicator of influenza. And if we go all the way back to 2009 and 2010, when we had the influenza pandemic, this percentage jumped up all the way to a frightening 8.1%, meaning that basically during the worst week, 1 in 12 people in the United States died of what looked like either influenza or pneumonia. And going a little bit further forward, 2017-18, we had a really, really bad influenza year, and it peaked out at 10.1%, okay? So about 1 in 10 people dying during that worst week died of influenza or pneumonia. Fast forward to the week ending April 11th this year, it hit a record of 23.5%. I've never seen it look that bad. That means that about 1 out of every 4 people in the United States that died that week died of influenza or pneumonia or COVID-19. And influenza was not circulating at that time. It had largely gone away. So the people who dismiss COVID-19 as being something that is hyperinflated or being hyped too much are unfortunately totally wrong. This is a real phenomenon. It's a scary disease. And the more we learn about it, the more frightening I think it becomes.
We continue our conversation about how the CDC records flu cases compared with COVID-19 cases and wider issues about the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Jonathan Temte is with us, Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the topic? What do you feel like you need more clarity on? What is confusing to you? There's a lot confusing about what's going on right now. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Steve is with us in Chautauqua. Steve, hello.
Hello. Hello. I want to thank the doctor for coming on, because probably for the past couple of weeks, this is all I've been thinking about. As a healthcare provider, I think, you know, this COVID virus has probably been here since probably November, and, you know, we've never tested for it, and we have people that are dying, certainly of congestive heart failure and flu, you know, that really skews the numbers to some extent. I just would like to know if he agrees a little bit that this could have been here in November and December, and the deaths around the country from flu-like symptoms could have been COVID, and we just didn't know it.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Now, I've seen in France, they retested some samples and found at least some cases earlier of COVID-19 than they had expected to find. One death in the U.S. was a couple weeks earlier than we expected. Dr. Temte, I don't know if I've seen anything. Maybe you have, talking about like November or December in the U.S.
Well, it's an excellent question, Steve. I think the evidence we have is that this made its way across the Pacific Ocean more like in early January to mid-January. We don't see much evidence for any spread before that. There are some efforts going forward to try and look at archival specimens, so specimens that were taken from individuals and put into deep freeze. So there's some ongoing work on that. But the other way to look at it is there has been a lot of work looking at the genomic sequencing of these viruses. And by looking at that, you can get an idea of the rate of mutation, where things are going. And it looks at like much of the virus right now that is circulating across the United States is actually been dominated more by the viruses that came through Europe and then made its way to the United States. So it's still an open book, but I think, to be honest, November is probably too early, possible December, but more likely the first case is in January.
Thanks a lot for that call. Dr. Tempty, I want to talk about our public health efforts here in the United States. The fear early on was we'd have exponential growth, spread of the novel coronavirus, worries about it overwhelming hospitals and other healthcare facilities. We've had stay-at-home orders of one sort or another in many states. We seem to have avoided that worst case, and now we're hearing arguments from the people who support it saying that shows this worked. We managed to keep the numbers down. Other people saying, look, the numbers are lower than expected. That proves we didn't need that. We can't run back the clock and do an experiment a different way. So how do you evaluate those two dueling claims?
Well, again, wonderful question. And in fact, I'm just looking at a graphic right now on my computer screen. And in fact, for the United States, we were in a full-blown exponential rise from about the beginning of March until about two-thirds of the way through March. And then we started seeing things taper off. If you can recall, March 18th in Wisconsin, we had a statewide closure of our schools and followed by a week by the stay-at-home executive order. And these things are what we have from a public health standpoint to effectively curtail transmission. So I would argue from everything I know about epidemiology of respiratory viruses, and the studies I've been doing over the last 20 years, that we see some beautiful evidence of the social distancing and the other public health initiatives having a tremendous effect and helping to limit the number of cases and, more importantly, limiting the number of deaths.
Let's bring on another caller now. Chris is with us in Fontana. Chris, hello.
Hello.
What do you want to bring up, Chris?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I pick up my prescriptions at a pharmacy in southeastern Wisconsin, and when I responded to a call to pick up my prescription, I was greeted at the door by someone who asked if I'd been recently exposed to somebody with COVID-19, and I said yes, I was around a person who was that night, in fact, tested positive for COVID-19, and they took my name and my phone number at the door of the pharmacy. And I wondered, what are they using that for? Are they tracking people that have been exposed to COVID-19 or have tested positive, or what is the deal with that?
Chris, thanks for the call. Dr. Tempty, it sounds like contact tracing, but I don't know what's actually happening in the state right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure about this particular case because connection between Walgreens and public health is not there at this point in time. So I'm not sure on the specifics for your particular situation there. A broader subject is that of widespread testing and contact tracing. And that implies that if a person is tested and they turn positive, public health will be in contact with that person, ask who may you have been around for prolonged periods of time over the period of time that we think you were contagious. And from there, you build upon and look for those individuals, offer voluntary testing. And by doing so, what you attempt to do is get on top of an outbreak. This is going to become more and more important as we have flattened this curve, and hopefully we see the number of cases going down. If you can jump on top of cases early on, identify them, identify contacts, do the second round of testing, you can better identify where things are spreading and how to contain them.
Thanks for that call. And Dr. Tepti, thanks so much for joining us again today.
Well, it has been my pleasure. Keep safe and keep doing good things.
That's Dr. Jonathan Tepti, Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He joined us today to talk about how flu cases are estimated and reported by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, how that compares and in some ways doesn't compare with the way COVID-19 cases are recorded.